here. I'd taken a poll of the committee to see whether they wanted to work in the evening or in the early morning, and the early morning won that poll. So that's
4-1, I understand.
Yes, it was 4-1, and even Ginny was a little bit ambivalent. And I appreciate all of you being here. And let's go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 410.
I'll go up there then.
Yes, go ahead. And Matt, could you get Senator Beyer in and tell him we...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
For the name, please.
For the record, my name's Jason Atkinson, Senator from Southern Oregon. Senate Bill 410, I was just talking to Senator Beyer as we walked up here. I said, when are we going to get a hearing on that? So I don't have all the packet of material that I usually have for this. I'll have it on the floor if we're able to move this bill. But what we're trying to do with the with 410 specifically is just two things. One is to take this program statewide, and two is to have the get the word out through the sport reg fishing regulations book that's published by the department, just to explain the program even more. What you see here, I'm just really excited that this is here today. This is an example of one of the of one of the recycle, I don't know what we call it, a kiosk or what we call it, but this is the
names that come to mind.
There's lots of names. Actually, I've seen it. Various groups have done this. I haven't seen one this big before. I've seen a little bit smaller, but this is fantastic. And what it is, it's a public-private partnership where sportsmen's groups will get together and put these at takeouts. The department will help clean them or service them when they're servicing things there already, and help get the word out. And what we're trying to do, Mr. Chair, real simply, is just change the ethic to get this stuff out of the river, to pick it up. And I've been so excited about this because the word has spread across the state very quickly. It's been wonderfully received, and it's doing a lot of work. Where I was when I first saw this program used in Alaska was one of the most heavily fished rivers. They actually called it combat fishing. I'd never really been associated with that term before, but there was people lined everywhere, just line and junk. But they had started a program like this with the Department of Fish and Game in Alaska, and they got all the stuff off the banks and got the stuff out of the rivers and all the lead and all the toxin stuff that actually people don't really use anymore. But anyway, they got that out of the rivers. What we did is we tried it last session in six rivers in Oregon, the Deschutes, the North Santa Am, the Rogue, I believe the Sandy, and one other. Anyway, it's been very well received, and what we're trying to do today is just take it statewide. There's been various editorial boards around the state that have commented on how successful this has been, and the best endorsement was my son, the two-year-old, saw this at the Ashland Kids Museum as an example of recycling, and there was a little plexiglass thing of one of these towers and line laying around. And I will tell you that on the Rogue River, where I first saw this as a major problem, at boat takeouts is fantastically clean these days, and it's working real well. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when it was a pilot program, you didn't know it was going to work, you needed help, you had me co-sponsor the bill with you. Now that you think it's going to be a good thing, you throw me the wind?
Yes, Senator.
Yeah. You vote yes.
Another question.
Yes.
You made the statement that where they can recycle lead and toxins and things like that aren't used anymore. I'd just like to point out that not everyone is a fly fisherman, and many of us still do use lead.
Yes, that's true. But we're also seeing that, as you know, sportsman buyer, a lot of the monofilament stuff is being, what's that new stuff? Fluorocarbon?
Where's
fluorocarbon. I don't know if I like it yet, but, and those, what are the things you use? Slinky things or whatever? Anyway, there's a little bit of fishing discussions we've had over the years about this. But anyway, we'll recycle all of it.
Senator Shields.
Yes, now that you've thrown Senator Beyer to the wind.
I actually haven't. I have been, when I hurried all my bills through this time, I'm sorry, my apologies to Senator Beyer.
You must need some help here.
Apparently so.
To think that's what's happening. I know I was thinking about you throwing Senator Beyer to the wind and looking at that wonderful operation and thinking maybe your bill as a consequence might go down the drain, or it might get flushed, or, you know, just all kinds of imagery comes to my mind.
Take some more coffee, Senator.
Huh? Drink some more coffee. Yeah, well, that's what you get for getting me up at this hour.
Thank you. Senator, I can suggest a question. Who pays for these? Is it the fishing groups?
Various sportsmen's groups will do it. Steelheaders. I think we've had some fly fishing clubs have done it. I know there's been some salmon clubs have done it. One guide in particular in Senator Beyer's district, Bill
Sanderson.
Sanderson. Is that right?
Sanderson
has been real supportive of it. Whoever grabs the vision and has a takeout that used to have all this stuff is welcome to do it, and it's worked really well.
Okay. What's your name?
My name is Art Israelson. I'm with the Northwest Steelheaders. And we assembled some of these last summer and put them out on the Sandy River. I checked one of them yesterday, and it did have line in it. I think we could reduce the price by 50% by putting two labels on one object.
Mm-hmm.
Make it 8 inches longer, 10 inches longer. They're very large. They work very well. The Northwest Steelheaders helped build about 7 or 8 of these and put them out on the Sandy River. And they've had very good reception with them.
Good. Okay.
And I don't think there's a problem getting organizations to help build them.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Roy Elliker and is it Ryan Messer?
Morning, Chair Ringo, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elliker, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And on my right is Ryan Messer, our Recreational Sport Fish Program Manager. I've passed out some prepared testimony, but I think actually all the aspects of the bill has been frankly covered by Senator Atkinson and Art Israelson from Northwest Steelheaders. It's been a very good program. It's been when we first met with Senator Atkinson last session that we didn't have much money to do this and really counting on volunteers to carry the brunt of the load, and they have really stepped up. It's been a very successful program, a lot of public support for the program. The rivers that currently we have these on here, as you see in the first paragraph of my testimony, is the Rogue, North Sandy Am, the Sandy, the Umpqua, the Salmon, and the Crooked. And the pilot program is scheduled to be in place till January 2008. Currently, I've also passed out for your information a report that we did on the first 2 years of the pilot program that you should have just received, and I'll let Mr. Messer kind of go over some of the highlights of that. But overall, Mr. Chair, this is a good bill. The department supports this bill. We're very pleased with the amount of support the public has put on this effort, and so far it's been very successful. And I'll let Ryan cover just a few details.
You know, could I ask questions about the fiscal impact of this bill?
Yes, sir.
What would that be? Does it? My committee staff said it has a fiscal. It sounds to me like it's almost entirely volunteer-driven.
Mr. Chair, that's exactly correct. It is almost all volunteer-driven.
Okay, so I'd really love to lose the fiscal and move it straight to the Senate floor. Is there a way we can just say the fiscal is de minimis and we can just do that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, unfortunately I was ill yesterday and I did not take a look at the fiscal that got filed. I'm happy if I could take a quick look at it. We might be able to do that.
I'm sorry, say that again.
I didn't have a chance to see the final fiscal before it got submitted, Mr. Chair. If I could take a quick look, maybe by the end of the session I could help you on that. I'm not aware exactly. I know it was a small fiscal. Maybe I'll let Ryan talk to that.
Chair Ringo, Ryan Messner, Recreational Fisheries Program Manager. I worked with Harry Epton on this financial impact. What this reflects is basically a measure of the current effort the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is spending on this program through administration of it, the evaluation that we have in place. We don't expect any additional ODFW effort to be expended on this program, that it will be supported by volunteer effort and supported by grants that we can acquire to the purchasing of signage and materials for this program. So the fiscal impact you see there is reflected upon some administration time in our central office to implement this, and some field step time within our STEP program to work with volunteers in getting this going. So there's no net gain in effort.
And when you're saying the fiscal that you see there, are you pointing to a document?
No. Chairman, would you repeat the question, please?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought you were referring to a fiscal that was on a piece of paper. Do you have a written fiscal impact of some sort?
Yes, I do.
Oh. Why don't we have it?
Yeah, I don't know if it doesn't have anything.
Fiscal has
been
weird, right? Can we just take a quick look at that?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the fiscal I have here doesn't show any costs for the department, frankly.
Okay. Well, that's what I like to hear.
Yeah, I was just thinking that going forward, since there's no fiscal, we ought to just dump the fiscal and send it straight to the floor.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Mr. Messman, we didn't give you a chance to testify. Do you want to add your 2 cents worth here?
Chair Ringo, yes, I would like to point out the annual report that we put together and just highlight on a couple of points. Is that this program was very well received by the public, with numerous requests for expansion of the program. Actually, the stickers you see here are mock-ups of the stickers. All the materials that we developed initially were given out to people to implement the program. What we saw is these recycling stations, as we refer to them as, provide a great focal point to spearhead efforts to clean up our streams. There is a need to do that. This is one of the many programs available, and we believe can really help emphasize that program. Another aspect we're working on is the informational aspect, the education, that we will be printing something in our sport fishing regulations next year that will reflect this program, also reflect an angling ethic that we believe that is lacking in many areas.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Appreciate the opportunity. Oh, thank you for coming in this morning. Let's close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 410.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I would move that we suspend the rules and remove a fiscal if there is one.
Okay. Senator Atkinson has moved that we remove the referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion?
Referral to Ways and Means on the bill?
There was a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, yes.
Don't we send it to the President's desk with a recommendation that we remove
All right, let's take this over.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Atkinson.
I move that we move this bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation, pass the Senate President to take off the referral to Ways and Means. I think I got the words there in the wrong order. But.
All right. Senator Atkinson has moved that we recommend to the Senate President that we remove the referral to Ways and Means, and that we instead move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
I think we ought to let Senator Beyer carry this bill since he worked so hard on it.
We'll let Senator Atkinson carry this bill. And let's open a public hearing then on Senate Bill 529.
If you could get a list on that, that would be great. Then.
Pretty cool, though, huh?
Matt, if you could grab all the sign-up sheets, that'd be great. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you to the members of the committee. My name is Celeste Creamy, and I represent the Oregon Spay Neuter Task Force. We're a volunteer group, loosely organized group of concerned individuals, about the 40,000 animals reporting to sleep every year in Oregon. That's about half of the shelter intake. I was just talking to a nice lady back here in Department of Human Services, and she was asking who was introducing the amendments. Is that you? Because originally it had come out of LC, even though we hadn't requested it, as being administered to the Department of Human Services, and that's not going to be a working...
Well, why don't we stop, and why don't we let the committee administrator introduce the bill and also explain about any amendments.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let's see here. Senate Bill 529 does a number of things. As written, it imposes a $3 annual fee on dog licenses in counties having a population of greater than 100,000. It establishes the Pet Sterilization Fund and then appropriates monies from the fund to the Department of Human Services and directs DHS to establish a program to partially compensate recipients of Medicaid and Oregon Health Plan services for veterinary sterilization of dogs and cats. There's three amendments that you have. The dash ones and the dash twos are rolled into the dash threes. The main function of the dash threes is it switches the responsibility for administering the program from the Department of Human Services, who I'm told didn't particularly want to run this program, to the Oregon State Veterinary Medical Examining Board. The dash ones and twos were technical amendments, as I recall, and the dash twos came from the State Treasurer's Office. And it appears to me that these changes were incorporated into the dash three, so I think that's the only amendment that we would need to pass.
Okay. Do you want to go ahead then and explain what the intent of the bill is?
Do you
want
to explain what?
What the intent of the bill is?
Yeah. What the bill would basically do is earmark $3 from each dog license to go to a very targeted spay neuter fund for Oregonians on low income and public assistance. That's the demographic that contributes most to those 40,000 animals every year. And that's basically what the bill would do. This has been shown to be very effective in other areas. It's been tried. Similar programs have been piloted in five states. New Hampshire's been doing it the longest. And just like 5 years, they reduced their euthanasia rates by 75%.
In what state is that?
In New Hampshire.
Okay.
Yeah. More importantly, the counties saved $3.15 for every dollar they spent on the spay neuter program, so it's very cost effective. It costs about $100 to take an animal into...
Into
a shelter, feed it, house it, process it, do all the paperwork, and then ultimately find it a home, have the owners reclaim it or euthanize it, where it costs much less than that to actually just get it spayed and neutered on a subsidized wide-scale program like this.
Okay. I don't have a dog, so I don't know how much a dog license is.
Mm-hmm.
How much is a dog license?
It varies from county to county, city to city.
Or just where you live?
$10.
$10. So mm-hmm. Essentially we're moving it from, say, $10 to $13.
Mm-hmm.
That's
it's up to the counties. They could either just take three out of that 10, or they could add three. I'm imagining they're going to want to add three. Their budgets are already pretty tight.
Senator Shields?
I don't want to throw a monkey wrench, but doesn't Multnomah County have a cat license as well? And wouldn't you add that also?
Not with this one.
We considered that, and it didn't end up being a good idea for several reasons, one of which is we just don't want to get into that. It's a minority. It's not fair to pick on Multnomah County for being the only county that licensed cats.
Hey, can we make that the rule that they don't pick on Multnomah County?
Yeah, I'd like to propose a motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anything else? Anything from the committee? Senator Byer?
Thank you. You said it's an optional that the counties can either take the $3 out of their existing fee, but the way I read Section 2 of the amendment anyway, it says that the county with a human population of 100,000 or more shall impose a fee for the licenses of dogs to include the $3.
That's what the amendment said?
Well, yes.
That's the language in both amendments.
So that, to me, that's not an optional. That's
okay, well, if they mess that up, then yeah, we're going to add that fee.
Well,
but that's, if I understood that the amendment was going to be a little different.
Senator Byler, I guess she'd suggested that essentially they may take the $3 out of the then existing fee, so essentially they'd be reducing it by $3. I don't think they'd likely do that. I think it's more likely, you're right, they will impose an additional $3.
The counties can give us $3 per dog license. How they get that is up to them. At least that was the intent of our bill.
Yeah. It's the same in the original bill, a little few different words, but basically the county would have the option to lower the license to accommodate the $3 tax, but I think practically speaking, it's unlikely that that they would do that. It would be a first in my experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else in the committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we're going to hold this bill while we think on it.
This also has a ways and means referral.
Yes, and it does have a ways and means referral that we're not going to remove. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 529. And let's open the public hearing on Senate Bill 848. Morning, Gerald. Did you have to drive down this morning just for this?
Indeed I did, although I would have needed to be here shortly hereafter anyway, so it was a great opportunity to start the day early.
Missed the traffic on 26.
I appreciate it. I think all of us realize the volume of work your committee's got before it, so we're happy to be here with you this morning to try to fit these bills in.
Okay. Do you want to just go ahead and...
Indeed. For the record, Gerald Kubiak, Government Affairs staff with Washington County, and also representing Clean Water Services down here. As a couple of you know, the Washington County Board of Commissioners also serves as the Board of Directors for a water resource management agency by the name of Clean Water Services. It serves all of urban Washington County, about 480,000 folks. Clean Water Services is a county service district organized under ORS Chapter 451. Clean Water Services has found that in order to perform its mission, which includes meeting standards imposed by the Clean Water Act, that conservation easements are a key tool for it to use. And the problem that we've come across that's caused us to ask to have this bill introduced is the fact that in statute, county service districts are not among those types of jurisdictions that have the authority to do conservation easements. We believe that we have a fairly unique situation where we've got one governing body that sees two different agencies in their role as county commissioners. Our Board of Commissioners can, in fact, do conservation easements. When they oversee Clean Water Services, they're not able to do conservation easements, and we think that poses some problems. I guess the big one is that the mechanism that Clean Water Services would use would be doing an intergovernmental agreement with the county, whereby the county would acquire and hold the easement on behalf of Clean Water Services, and that would be codified through an IGA, which we believe imposes unnecessary costs. Effectively, it's asking a governing body to enter into an IGA with itself. So the underlying logic to this bill is that the fix that we've got grants conservation easement authority only to Clean Water Services, and the rationale is that, as the Board of Commissioners wears its county hat, it's already got conservation easement authority. Why not grant it that same authority when it's doing its work on behalf of Clean Water Services? And we believe that Given that the Board of Commissioners is the taxing authority in the county, it's very well positioned to assess the costs and benefits of easements. And I wanted to also mention that we've got no opposition to this bill that we're aware of, and the Special Districts Association is neutral on it. And I want to just speak briefly to the Dash 1 amendments you've got before you. We support those, and we ask to have them done. They correct a slightly erroneous statutory reference that occurred at the time the bill was drafted that we unfortunately missed, and it just cites slightly incorrect subsections of ORS 451. So those changes are primarily technical. They just accurately attribute the 451 roles to Clean Water Services. I'm joined, with that I'd be happy to answer questions. I want to just note I'm joined to my right by Mark Jockers, who's with Public Affairs of Clean Water Services. I'd be happy to answer questions.
I have a question. You know, the amendment states that we're adding this, the Clean Water Service, it doesn't specify it by name, but clearly it's focused at Washington County.
Yes.
Why does the bill need to be drafted so focused on Washington County? Why wouldn't the same issue apply to other areas of the state?
Senator Ringo, we at Washington County didn't necessarily have the desire to be exclusive with trying to get this authority for ourselves. By the same token, I guess 2 points on it. One is that we believe that the problem that we've faced and the solution we've got is focused on good governance and efficiency, and it's not focused on the policy of who can grant conservation easements, when and where. That's a great policy discussion, and we believe that's a separate policy discussion from the issue we needed to face. And I guess the second point is that we do believe that the universe, if you will, of other service districts that have the Board of Commissioners as their Board of Directors is fairly limited. It's in the single digits. And
say that again.
Yes.
Number of other areas that have
across the state. Across the state, as far as we know, Commissioner Senator Ringo, the overall number of county service districts that also have the Board of Commissioners as their Board of Directors is low. It's in the single digits, and we're not aware that any of them do water resource management functions. So it's a really small population to start with.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Shields?
The simple way of understanding this, and that's what I'm trying to do, is that the County Commission works as a Board of Directors for Clean Water Services on the one hand, and as a county commissioner on county commission on the other hand. And so you could say that this is an efficiency bill because it keeps the county commission from making an intergovernmental agreement with itself.
Chair Ringo.
Isn't that about what happens?
Chair Ringo,
just making an agreement with himself?
That's correct. We believe we've got a fairly unique situation. So while we're happy to get into the policy discussion about who can do conservation easements, we believe that this situation doesn't touch on that policy discussion. This is really a governmental efficiency issue.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to speak for Clean Water Services?
Senator Ringo, thank you. I apologize for stepping in here a little late. I appreciate the opportunity to come here today, and I thank the committee here for hearing this. This is an efficiency thing. We, Clean Water Services, as Gerald had said, does water resource management, sanitary sewer, and surface water management services for about 500,000 people in Washington County. In the last 5 years, we've invested more than $5 million in stream restoration enhancement programs in the Tualatin Basin, and we expect more than double that in the next 5 years. And this is a tool that will provide us efficiencies in terms of how we work with landowners. It's going to make the process much less cumbersome, much less complex, and we'll be able to engage them in the restoration of these streams much easier. So I appreciate the opportunity to come here today and appreciate the committee for looking at this, and would encourage you to recommend it.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else want to testify on this bill? Okay, let's close the public hearing and open a work session
on Senate Bill 848. Senator Atkinson? Chair moves the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 848. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Chair, I move the bill as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved Senate Bill 848 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So let's open a... I'll go ahead and carry that. Chair opens a hearing on Senate Bill 696. Christina McNitt and Glenn Stonebrink, if you want to come up, that'd be great.
They're color coordinated.
Yeah, they color coordinated.
I never thought I'd see Glenn wearing pink.
Thank you.
It's happening.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing this morning the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which is a trade association, a voluntary trade association of special districts, local governments, primarily formed for the delivery of irrigation water. Senate Bill 696 was requested at our request with the intent of providing some administrative discretion to districts operating under exclusion statutes for the purpose of reducing administrative processes, eliminating unnecessary costs for districts and for the irrigation district patrons, and for providing consistency in state law between the current exclusion statutes and inclusion statutes. An irrigation district patron may request to have his or her land excluded from an irrigation district boundary as a means of ending his or her relationship with the district. An exclusion is usually requested when the patron no longer wants to receive the irrigation water or otherwise be subject to the charges and assessments of the district. The current process gives the irrigation district no discretion on acting on an exclusion request. Senate Bill 696 would allow the district to satisfy the needs of the patron by ending irrigation district water deliveries as well as assessments, but it would keep the property eligible to receive irrigation water in the future. Currently, when an exclusion is granted and then the owner or a subsequent owner then requests to receive irrigation water in the future, the district is then obligated to go through an inclusion process. Senate Bill 696 would provide districts some discretion to reduce the necessity of this administrative process. The second point is that when a patron requests an exclusion, the district may be required to prepare new maps showing the adjusted boundary of the district. Mapping costs can reach thousands of dollars, especially if there's a Bureau of Reclamation interest in the district, whereby the federal government views that as a federal action and you might have to go through a NEPA process. Maps then are filed with the county or counties in which the district was formed. And Senate Bill 696 would provide the district, again, discretion to save the cost to the district and to the petitioners.
Excuse me, how does it save those costs? Just by not doing the maps again?
Correct. I think I'm going to do my visual aid when I'm done with my testimony,
okay,
just to kind of explain. Really, what it boils down to is this is a mapping bill. This is a district boundary bill, and it's an administrative process. So let me make my third point, and then I will draw my amoeba irrigation district,
okay,
which is what we call it in the office. And then currently we're interested in matching our formation and exclusion statutes. Currently, when a district is formed, the district does have the discretion to include all lands that may benefit or be eligible to receive irrigation water from the district. Lands, excuse me, may also be added through an inclusion process, and such an inclusion can be made without the consent of a property owner if it's purely for administrative convenience, with the convenience being, again, that if the current owner does not want to receive water, a future owner of that same property will already be in a position to receive water at some future date.
So if a property owner is brought in through the inclusion process, does that property owner pay anything?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that's correct. The property owner then would go to the district and say, hey, you know, now my cropping patterns have changed. I have interest in getting some water on those lands. What will it cost me to join into the district? And depending on the district costs, they would be subject to the, you know, operation and management fees and the water fees. They may also be subject to...
But you're saying if that property owner wants to...
Correct, and that's
and,
the key.
And yes, but your statement here said such an inclusion can be made without the consent of the property owner.
And right.
So that's what I'm asking about is if that property owner is brought in without that property owner's consent, what will the cost be to that property owner?
Zero.
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members.
And that's because they're not using any water.
Exactly. I'll jump to my visual aid.
That's all right.
Imagine that this is the exterior boundary of an irrigation district. It's just a map. We'll call this the Amoeba Irrigation District. A lot of districts, just by necessity, include lands within the exterior boundaries that are not subject to either the fees or the charges of the district, nor do they receive the benefits of the district, which is water delivery. They just happen to be inside the exterior boundaries of the district. The X inside the district would represent a landowner who's interested in going through a formal exclusion process, which would mean the district would have to approve it and then go and remap this exterior boundary to carve out that X. And what Senate Bill 696 would do would provide the district the discretion to say if it's not in the best interest of the district for administrative processes, we'll just keep the exterior boundaries the same, but the person who wants out is still out. They're not a member in good standing of the district. They don't have to pay any fees. They're not subject to any future fees unless they come to the district and want the district services. It's actually of value for that property to stay in the district susceptible to irrigation in the future.
Mr. Chair.
Does that make sense, or is it more confusing?
Does this have any effect on the allocation? That's going to be a real issue, I suspect, this summer in a lot of districts. I mean, if the water user, does the allocation go to the irrigation district and then they divide it among the users if there's a limited supply, or how does this affect the allocation of water?
I think there's two questions there, Senator Burdick and Chair Ringo. With respect to drought statutes and how districts can manage water, I'm not that familiar with that, but I know that Adam Sussman from the department's in the room, and he could provide some more information on that. But the district does have an interest in making sure that it's managing water for the benefit of all of its patrons. And if a member who is no longer interested in their water comes to the district, they can either cancel their water right, they can forfeit their water right, they can transfer their water right, and work with the district in moving that water around. But this bill really doesn't deal with the management of the water. It just deals with what the district is compelled to do with respect to its exterior boundaries and how it manages those with the individual who's no longer interested in being inside the district.
So, Mr. Chair, I guess my question was, if a property owner cancels their water and they're still in the district, does the district then obtain that water for allocation to other users, or does that water right go away temporarily?
Senator Burdick and members of the committee, that would depend, I hate to keep kind of dancing around, but that would depend on the water right. There are a variety of different water rights and how districts are formed. Some water rights are individual water rights. They have come together to form an irrigation district, and the district would work with that landowner as he or she leaves the district. Some water rights are held in trust by the district for the use of the landowners. Some districts come together and they have the Bureau of Reclamation has an interest in the water, the irrigation district would have an interest in the water, and the landowner would have an interest in the water.
Okay, I guess, Mr. Chair, what I'd have to find out before I would want to approve this bill is I think it makes total sense from an administrative standpoint, but I'd want to make sure that it didn't alter the water rights, which are based on seniority. I mean, there's a whole system of water rights, and they are very complex, and I don't think the intent of this bill is to fiddle with those, and I would want to make sure it did not, in fact, do that.
Mr. Chair and members, I can assure you that it does not. I would be happy to provide you after this hearing with a statutory reference for the different ways that a district and patrons manage that water and move it around within the district. But this ORS statute specifically deals only with the boundaries of the district and not water management inside the district.
As I read the bill, it says that, you said, well, this is just a question of how you should draw the map. But to me, it appears to be giving the Board of Directors the authority to deny a petition for exclusion. And right now, they don't have that authority.
That's correct.
So somebody can say, we want to be excluded. You're going to say, all right, no, now we can deny the exclusion. And I guess this doesn't specify, though, that will have an impact on whether they receive, whether they're going to be subject to any payment or not.
Right, and Mr. Chair and members, ORS 545-099 just specifically deals with the portion of the process of excluding from a district boundary, and other portions of Chapter 545 deal with the water management.
All right, and actually my committee administrator just clarified an issue for me. Mr. Stoneberg?
Yes. For the record, I'm Glenn Sunlake with the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. When I looked at the bill, it was a little confusing at first because, and maybe still is, because the main emphasis appears to be on line 19. And it gives the Board of the Irrigation District the right to deny the petition for administrative convenience. And in that, as it's been explained by Christina here earlier, to talk about the cost and having to remap and that sort of thing. But Section 3, which is on line 22, says the Board, as a condition of exclusion, may require the petitioner to pay all costs of exclusion. So if there's cost involved with getting out of the district, that allows them at that point to charge for the cost, as I see it. And so if there's another reason that you don't, if the districts don't want to allow this, the lands to be excluded, I'd like to know what it is, because the problem I have is that while this might be a good thing in a particular part of the state, we have a lot of people from around the state, our members of the Cattlemen's Association, some belong to districts, some do not, and I'm trying to determine if this, I've had some people already say that they're not sure what this might do, if they want to give this power to the board that of the irrigation district that they belong to. So I'm looking at maybe it works in the particular area that you're talking about, but around the state, I'm not too sure. And if this is the only reason for this, and that's what it says on 19, for administrative convenience and its cost, those costs can be picked up in 22, and maybe there's a better explanation I don't understand here.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I respond to that?
Yes, go ahead.
In my testimony, I talked about the cost to the district and to the water users. And, of course, the district costs are paid for by the water users that are subject to the charges and assessments. But the petitioners for petition for exclusion can petition that the petitioners pay for the cost of exclusion and for those maps. Those are thousands and thousands of dollars, especially if there's a federal nexus in a district that might have a Bureau of Reclamation interest in it. All we're doing is asking that Senate Bill 696 allow the discretion for the district to work with the patron instead of being compelled to approve that petition and levy those fees, to allow them the same discretion that they have in the petition for inclusion process.
Okay. Senator Beyer, it's your bill. I was just going to ask if you had any input for us.
Mr. Chair, thank you. No, I really don't. I mean, the bill was introduced as a courtesy to the irrigation users, and so
okay.
I think they've explained it quite well.
Okay. I guess I'm looking for guidance from the committee here, whether Senator Burdick, did you have some discomfort you want to...
Well, if we have somebody from the... water resources area who could just talk about the allocation and just assure me that this is not having any impact on the allocation.
We'll do that. And,
Adam, if you want to come on up, that'd be great. You're not signed up. Are you prepared to testify on this bill?
I can. I'm not prepared to testify. I could try to answer a question.
Well, why don't you take a seat and identify yourself? That'd be fine. Good morning. For the record, I'm Adam Sussman with the Water Resources, and Senator Ringo, Senator Burdick, those are really great questions that you're asking, and I think I would answer it as two separate questions, I think similar to the way Christina did. Number one, in terms of the way the district would allocate their water during a dry year such as this, there's many tools that they can use. For one thing that districts often do in low water years is enter into kind of a rotation schedule. So the district essentially pools their water rights, and then the patrons within the district share that water to the extent that they can, so everybody gets an equal share. And that's a pretty normal activity that a district would do in a low water year. So those are the kinds of things that they would do.
Just to interject,
yes.
Have you had a chance to read the bill, and is your department comfortable with it?
I have not read the bill, and I haven't really participated in this bill.
All right,
bill.
Is what I'd like to do. I mean, we have a few other things to run through this morning. I'd like to just put this bill on hold. I'd like to hear from you where you are on the bill, and let's just know for sure if there's any ambiguities or issues, and then we'll make a decision. Yes, Senator Shields?
Yes, I might have had a chance to talk to Christina about this a little bit more than the rest of you. I don't know. But it seems like a simple mapping bill. The water portions are even in a different place. It doesn't have to do with water or allocation of water. It has to do with mapping. It has to do with the cost savings to districts, which means ultimately cost savings to the water users. So I don't have a problem with the bill. Maybe I'm missing something, but I think we're finding problems that aren't as serious as we think they are.
You may be right, but it appears to me that you're giving more authority to the board in terms of denying requests for exclusions. Mr. Stonebrink raised issues as to whether there will be costs associated with that. I just want to hear from the department another time. So let's go ahead and we'll close this public hearing.
Thank you.
And we're not opposing the bill. I just want to...
Mr. Chairman, I want to make it clear that I'm also in favor of the fundamental purpose of the bill. I just want to make sure that that's all we're doing.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's close the public hearing on Senate Bill 696, and we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2083. Is this our first House bill?
It isn't.
Okay. Mr. Sussman.
Which one are we doing now?
I'm still 2083.
Good morning, and for the record again, Adam Sussman. I'm with the Department of Water Resources. I do have some written testimony that's being passed around to the committee, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify on House Bill 2083. This is a Water Resources Department bill that was pre-session filed by the governor on behalf of the department and the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, and essentially what this bill is a result of the department in the interim scouring the statutes looking for things that we're doing that are burdensome, that don't really add value to our water management activities, and if we stopped doing, would not diminish any protection to the water resources or the state's water users. And so really what the bill does is eliminates three provisions in the law. Section 1 of the bill eliminates a seller notification when a property is sold. That includes a water right. This is some paperwork that currently is required to be sent into the department, but what we're finding is there's not a lot of compliance with that, but more importantly, even the material that we get is not necessarily something we can rely on, and there's new technology, particularly with digital assessor databases, where we can find that material efficiently and accurately. The second provision that's being eliminated, this is in Section 4 of the bill, where it just lists a number of statutes that are being eliminated, is a process that was established in the early 90s to register a water use and operate under that registration while you were trying to obtain your permit. The reason for that provision was that the department had a significant backlog and there were projects that were being held up, and so this was a way to move those forward despite the backlog. And since that time, since 1993 when this provision was adopted, there are numerous new tools and statute that
provide an opportunity to move quickly with projects, and the department's eliminated its backlog, and this provision is not necessary and frankly hasn't been used since 1996. Finally, we're proposing to eliminate the provision to record a well ID tag on a deed. Whenever a new well is constructed in the state now, there's an identification tag attached to that well, and that provides a unique number in the department's database so that we can track the location of that well if we need to. The statute also requires that ID tag be recorded on the deed, and we're finding, again, that that's not really something that's necessary for our water management activities, and we're proposing to delete that. So those are the three provisions we're proposing to delete. We've talked with our stakeholders throughout this process. There's no opposition to the bill. It moved through the House handily on the floor of the 57 aye votes, and I ask for your favorable approval of the bill. Thank you.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you. These changes seem fine, but what's even better, I think, is just the process you went through to try to find provisions that are obsolete and just cause people a lot of unnecessary busy work. I think that helps everyone with the public to go through that process. And I'm just wondering if this was a directive for all agencies to do this or whether you took this on yourself.
Well, Senator Ringo and Senator Burdick, I mean, this is part of the governor's initiative for regulatory streamlining, and through the Office of Regulatory Streamlining, they certainly are a catalyst for all agencies to do this kind of work. But I think even before that office was formed, you would find agencies looking for ways to make things more streamlined for their customers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, any questions? We've got a real controversial bill here. Let's close the a public hearing and open a work session on House Bill 2083.
Mr. Chair, I'd move House Bill 2083 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Burdick, carry the bill.
Senator Atkinson has moved House Bill 2083 to the floor with a due pass recommendation, requesting that he carry the bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. So let's open a hearing on SJM 4. And Camille, I'll tell you that this is a bill that I have introduced, or a memorial I've introduced, that is almost identical to House Joint Memorial 15 from last year, expressing opposition to the federal programs that require fees for people to use the trails in our federal lands. And Senator George and I are co-sponsoring this joint memorial because we don't believe those fees are necessary to manage the lands, and instead they just tend to... Senator Burdick, could you hang for just 1 minute, please?
Oh, sure.
Just a second. This is going to be very brief.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. And so this this is just a memorial, and we all know what memorials are for. How much they're worth, but frankly, it's just to express opposition to the federal government imposing fees for folks using our state lands. Is there any discussion?
Are you in work session?
No. Okay, let's close the public hearing on SJM 4. Open up a work session on SJM 4. Senator Atkinson.
Mr. Chair, I move SJM 4 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Atkinson has moved SJM 4 with a... With what recommendation?
Do adopt
recommendation. Thank you, Katie. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. And the committee on the Environment and Land Use is now adjourned. Yeah, I'll carry that. Committee.